From Indiana to Lebanon, Corey to Connellsville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, funding for public transit systems is in the spotlight as Governor Josh Shapiro diverts hundreds of millions of dollars from road and bridge projects to fund SEPTA. David Taylor is here to host a Capital Watch roundtable discussion on the issue. And Governor Josh Shapiro is being touted as a potential 2028 presidential candidate. But first, he must stand for re-election. I'll have a town hall commentary on why that is not a slam dunk. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. In 2023, Allegheny County voters narrowly elected a far-left so-called progressive Democrat as county executive. Now, property owners will pay the price. The county council has approved a 26% hike in property taxes. County Executive Sarah Inamorato had proposed a 47% property tax increase, but that request was pared down a bit by county council. Three Democrats and two Republicans on the council voted against the tax hike, which passed on a 10-5 vote. The Philadelphia 76ers are upping the ante on how much they will pay under a community benefits agreement to build a new arena in the Chinatown section of the city. The proposed $1.3 billion project has drawn strong objections from the community over concerns it will substantially change the character of one of the city's most storied neighborhoods. The Sixers have agreed to pay $50 million into the community benefits fund, but it's now considering a larger payment in an effort to obtain approval from the Philadelphia City Council. There is a saying about paybacks, which we can't use on this program, but Philadelphia's George Soros-backed Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner is about to find out. Earlier this year, Krasner attempted to charge Elon Musk over a Musk-funded voter registration project on behalf of Donald Trump. The courts rejected Krasner's argument, but now a Musk-affiliated political action committee is going to take aim at Krasner. America PAC is planning to fund challengers to Soros-funded DAs across the country who seek re-election next year. This year, a dozen Soros-funded DAs either lost re-election bids or were recalled in a voter backlash over their soft-on-crime policies. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Transportation funding, specifically how to pay the rising cost amid declining ridership of the state's public transportation systems. Governor Josh Shapiro has placed a Band-Aid on the problem by taking money away from road and bridge projects, but challenges remain. Our Capital Watch crew is here to talk about it. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capital Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, great to see you.
Good to see you too, David. Thank you.
And with us on the team, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, David.
So, again, for the benefit of the listeners, we're going around about what's happening here in your state capital, Sin City, Harrisburg, PA. And so they're moving money around, Steve. Tell us about that. What's the latest?
Several weeks ago, Governor Shapiro announced that he was going to be flexing, which means moving or taking and putting somewhere else, more than $150 million from already approved highway infrastructure projects. And instead, and these were projects across the state, and instead divert those funds to the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority, known as SEPTA,
right?
Basically a large public transit system in the Philadelphia area. That in and of itself is a little unsettling. You're moving millions and millions of dollars that were approved for another project to another entity all of a sudden without a lot of planning, without a lot of foresight. But worse than that, the situation at SEPTA is that their ridership has dropped by nearly 40% since 2019.
Ow.
But yet its operating budget has risen by 9.3% during that same period. So spending much, much more for fewer and fewer riders on the various systems that are associated with SEPTA. And it's been likened to the old adage about robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah.
But in this case, you're robbing Peter of it's already stretched. Our highway funds are already stretched.
Right.
There's not a lot there. You're robbing from the highway funds to put it into an absolute downward unsuccessful project known as SEPTA that is just consuming millions and millions of dollars while losing riders right and left.
Yeah.
And it's one of the least competitive transportation systems in the whole country.
Certainly, it's an audacious move on the part of the governor. And if you look at the fine print on where he took the money from, I believe that you'll be able to match up the districts of state Senate leaders with the locales where the road work was to be done. So that's a pretty, you know, direct and personal message. It's long been a question of, with mass transit, how can it be rendered cost effective? I think everybody concedes that we need to have the buses and the trains and all those things and the dense populated centers to
some economically appropriate amount.
Correct. To get people to and fro. And it's important for the economy and for jobs, for people to be able to get to work. But as you correctly note, when there's such a steep drop in ridership, and not only are they not able to hold the line on spending, but that spending goes up, like that is the very definition of unsustainable.
And they're not having the hard conversations that they need to have, which is, first of all, what kind of a fare are they going to charge their ridership so that the ridership, as is normally the case, can carry a lot of the burdens of operating the public mass transit system. And further is the question of, are they just going to make it bigger? Because they're just going to keep spending more as ridership goes down. Have they made those difficult analyses of which routes are the profitable routes and which ones are not? And have they considered committing to eliminate inefficiencies in the system, such as closing those kind of unused routes?
If only such things were applicable in southeastern Pennsylvania. So, Rebecca, you're right there in the middle of the transportation world. I'm sure that you have thoughts about this, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. So when the governor made this move, he did note that there had been several times the state House representatives passed bills to increase funding for SEPTA, for mass transit generally. And I think it was three bills that had passed in the House. And they sent them over to the Senate, but the Senate didn't consider them this past session. What those bills did was increase the percentage of the sales tax that would go to mass transit. So it didn't take away, they didn't take away transportation funds, any more transportation funds, and divert them to mass transit, but it increased the percentage of the state sales tax that would go to mass transit. So those were the bills that the House put forth, and they were the governor's proposal in the budget last year to try to do that. Like I said, the Senate didn't consider them. And the reason they didn't is because the Senate believes that the Senate Republican leadership believes that we shouldn't be talking about transportation funding for mass transit in a vacuum, because transportation funding is a much larger issue than that. And it needs to include roads and bridges, too. So the Senate asked the governor to come forward with a proposal that includes funding and a funding solution for roads, bridges, and mass transit all in one package.
Mm-hmm.
And that just never happened last year. So I think this proposal and this sort of shell game that you mentioned, the moving of funds, is to sort of force that conversation to happen now. So I think those questions need to be asked for sure, because there probably is some analysis from probably a third party that should go into those questions that you're talking about, that should happen with SEPTA. And that is something that the General Assembly should definitely bring into those conversations that will happen next year, because I think we all understand that transportation will be a conversation here in the spring.
Well, I mean, it's one of the things that you know, state government is actually supposed to do with, you know, providing for, you know, publicly used infrastructure. And certainly with the federal highway system, that's a partnership with the, you know, with the U.S. government, federal taxpayer money. So, again, it'll be interesting as we pivot now from the 2024 election cycle just concluded into the 2026 cycle, which of course is the gubernatorial race and the reelection of Governor Shapiro, and you know, certainly the him looking with loftier ambitions beyond that, that he's, you know, looking to burnish his record and to, you know, put wins on the board. But we've got to find a way to not only, you know, provide more resources, but we need to make those dollars go further. We need to get more value out of dollars already being spent before we commit, you know, any more out of the private economy to go for these public purposes.
Government entities don't actually make money. They rely on the taxpayers to pay them to do things. And that creates a drain on the public, and the taxpayers are not a bottomless pit. They you can't simply maintain bureaucratic monopolies forever that are always drawing income away from those who are out there working hard and doing the best they can to support their families. We come to a point at which decisions have to be made, as you accurately point out.
I mean, it's like you said, there's just not enough money to go around. I think everyone's come to that conclusion for sure. And this is largely, I mean, every state, we're not the only ones who are dealing with this issue. Every state really is dealing with this right now, these transportation funding issues. And it's largely a federal issue. And it actually is caused by the fact that the federal gas tax and diesel tax hasn't been raised since 1993. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we've seen a lot of inflation since that time. And the big thing is that fuel efficiency has increased so substantially since 1993 that the gas and fuel tax collected on the fuel that's being, you know, consumed mm-hmm. is just not there anymore. So that's why we're seeing declining funds at the federal level. And that, of course, is trickling down to the states. So the states are really looking for other funding options right now. And that's why, Governor Wolf proposed the bridge tolling proposal he had to toll nine interstate bridges a couple years ago. And mm-hmm. happily that fell through. We were glad to see that. But they're really looking for, funding from any which way right now. And to the point of really trying to find ways to spend that funding that they do have more efficiently. We do need to, you know, really push them on that. And I know there's a bill right now that would allow PennDOT to use design build for roadway construction, which would probably save a lot of money instead of design bid build, which would really improve the use of transportation funding that we already have.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation.
The design build approach is something that we definitely should look at because it would save a lot of funds in roadway construction and maintenance. Design build is where one firm designs and constructs a project rather than a design bid build approach, which is what we use now, where multiple firms work on a project. And it actually could save about 20% to 30% on construction and maintenance and in transportation projects.
Well, that would be really significant.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. And I didn't mention that there's a Reason Foundation report that recently found that Pennsylvania is 41st in the nation for highway performance and cost effectiveness.
At the national level, we're having this conversation with the Department of Government Efficiency, with the Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, and the advice is just, you know, pouring in by the avalanche of things that the federal government is doing that are massively stupid or wasteful or inefficient or just like not needed at all. It's a revolutionary kind of thinking, but it shouldn't be. I mean, we should always be asking, what is the value that is being derived from the dollars that are being spent? But it doesn't matter unless you're actually getting more value. And the best would be if you would just take the current level of spending and use that better so that you wouldn't need to take more out of the private economy, as I previously said.
And so often it's not a lack of good ideas. There are many, many good ideas about how we, for example, we could build transportation infrastructure in a more economically sound way. But what we're missing is not the good ideas. There are a lot of good ideas out there, things we could apply right away that would help save the taxpayer millions and millions of dollars in, on any given subject. But it's a lack of political will.
Mm-hmm.
There is simply the bureaucratic state, the perpetual monopoly of government in certain arenas is a stubborn thing to remove.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no economic case for it. It should be removed.
Yeah.
But yet the lack of political will, and really it takes courageous politicians, courageous political leaders to challenge these situations and actually stand by the taxpayer.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but in Idaho, that state government there has committed to systematic removal of regulations, and that their attitude is like, look, let's lighten the burden by just getting rid of things, and if a problem develops from not having the regulation, we'll put it back.
Wow.
And the regulatory burden the has gone into a steep decline. They've repealed all kinds of stuff.
That's awesome.
And yet the world has not ended and things still seem to be going okay in Idaho. So maybe, just maybe, we never needed all of this overbearing government busy work to begin with.
And it takes us back to the issues with public transportation like SEPTA, where the idea is sound. It's okay to have a municipal mass transit system, but the idea that it should just continuously be bailed out for its own financial indiscretions time after time after time with taxpayer dollars, that's what's wrong with the system.
And it should be, to the greatest extent reasonable, a user pay type system. You know, obviously you've got to consider that, you know, that Philadelphia itself has a lot of people who are poor, and that we need those folks to be able to use, the municipal transportation. But again, if you're going to have assistance, the assistance should be concentrated towards the people who really need it, rather than just, you know, having something blanket across the board, like saying, you know, all senior citizens ride free.
Yeah. And I think that's one way to really fix some of these government programs or government subsidized programs, is to really target them at the people they're intended to help. So if that means means testing, for example, the people who really need the assistance, who need SEPTA to be able to get to their jobs and make a living, then let's target those people who need the help rather than subsidizing the entire system, or taking away the market incentive that's there. So let's focus on those people that the system is designed to help, and help them.
Right, because there are a lot of folks who can't afford to have their own vehicle, or to keep that vehicle, you know, fueled and insured and operational and all that stuff. So, the point is very well made, and it also makes me think about the inescapable truth that Pennsylvania makes no sense geographically because the king didn't know what was over here when he gave the land grant to the Penns. And so as a result, you know, Philadelphians and Pittsburghers and Scrantonians just don't live in the same headspace day by day. And so this is a very, as the name says, southeastern Pennsylvania issue. Not that there aren't other systems. They are. But other than the one in Allegheny County, they're all really, you know, comparatively, they're very small. And so this is part of the friction of, you know, of having our Commonwealth be so broad and, you know, geographically and sociologically diverse, is that you're relying on, people from all corners of the Commonwealth to pay for a system that they themselves don't use and may never use.
And it's a microcosm of government attitudes towards spending in general.
Right.
And
more cowbell. Yeah.
A large scale, expensive, top heavy government is going to be tough on taxpayers, because they're going to see themselves as the answer to all the problems.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to indulge in creating all sorts of new monopolistic enterprises at the
yes.
government level that will help some people, but at the cost of hurting many others.
And it's too much conversation for the time that we have left in the show, but I mean, lawsuit abuse. Philadelphia is probably America's lawsuit abuse capital, and SEPTA gets hit with all kinds of crazy suits all the time. And so if it wasn't being treated, you know, like a pinata by the ambulance chasers, that would also probably leave more money for actually, you know, getting people to and from their homes. Well, we're running low on time here. Just, Rebecca, final thoughts on this subject of the day.
Sure. Well, I think this is a conversation that needs to happen next year, and I'm looking forward to it. But it is transportation is a huge issue, and it includes mass transit, but it also includes all the roads and bridges in the Commonwealth. So let's have that discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think, Steve?
Indeed. The discussion is going to be had no matter what. We have to do it. The problem is real. The crisis looms.
Yeah. And, you know, that when it comes to transportation, you know, writ broadly, that it's a critical business issue, because all those logistical challenges of getting, you know, with manufacturing, getting raw materials from the, you know, wherever they're originated to, get them to the factory, get the finished product from the factory to wholesale and retail, like every single thing that you own was made in a factory mm-hmm. and delivered to the store where you bought it or to your home in a truck.
In a truck. That's exactly right.
So, yep. All right. Well, anyway, that's all the time we've got. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you're doing?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org on the web.
Outstanding. And Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at PMTA.org.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. And from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks so much to all of you for listening. And we will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Political truisms are true until they are not. For decades, there were two political truisms in Penn's Woods. Party control of the governor's office flipped every 8 years, and you can't beat a Casey. Both have fallen like an evergreen tree at Christmas time. In 1968, Pennsylvania voters approved a number of revisions to the state constitution. Until that time, governors were limited to a single 4-year term. The update changed that, allowing a governor to serve 2 terms or 8 years. Milton Schapp, who had shortened his name from Shapiro, was elected in 1970 and became the first Pennsylvania governor to serve 2 consecutive terms. Schapp, a Democrat, served for 8 years, followed by Republican Richard Thornburgh, commencing a decades-long tradition of the two political parties exchanging control of the executive branch every 8 years. That was the case until it wasn't. Tom Wolf broke the cycle in 2014 when he defeated incumbent Republican Governor Tom Corbett. Wolf served 2 terms but was then succeeded by current Governor Josh Shapiro, giving Democrats the executive mansion for at least 12 years. The second political truism, you can't beat a Casey, fell this year when Senator-elect David McCormick defeated incumbent Robert P. Casey Jr. in a close race. Casey's father, Robert P. Casey Sr., was governor from 1987 to 1995. The elder Casey had served in the state Senate and as Auditor General, losing campaigns for the governorship in 1970 to Schapp and in 1978 to Peter Flaherty. During his losing streak, Casey watched as others bearing the same name were elected state treasurer and another winning the Democratic nomination for lieutenant governor. Finally, in 1986, running as the real Bob Casey, he was elected governor. Governor Casey was a moderate, rare even before the current leftward lurch of the Democrat Party. He was most noted for his pro-life stance. The elder Casey became seriously ill during his tenure and underwent a multiple organ transplant, endearing himself to the Pennsylvania electorate. Robert P. Casey Jr. followed in his father's footsteps, serving as Pennsylvania Auditor General and then state treasurer. His lone bid for the governorship ended in defeat at the hands of Ed Randell, who went on to serve 2 terms in the state's top office. In 2006, Casey challenged incumbent U.S. Senator Rick Santorum for one of Pennsylvania's two seats in the upper chamber, and in a wave election year for the Democrats, won by a landslide. And so, for the past 20 years, Robert P. Casey Jr. has been a juggernaut in Pennsylvania politics. He easily dispatched opponents in 2012 and 2018 and was viewed as the prohibitive favorite in 2024. But then along came Donald Trump and Dave McCormick, both of whom ran near flawless campaigns en route to statewide victories. The Casey political truism was no more. That brings us back to Governor Josh Shapiro. Shapiro was one of the finalists on Vice President Kamala Harris's list of potential running mates. In what is widely viewed as an error in judgment, she bypassed Shapiro for Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who in the end added nothing to the ticket. Given the drubbing Harris took at the hands of Donald Trump, Governor Shapiro is likely counting his blessings that he wasn't selected. He has now positioned himself as a top contender for the 2028 Democratic presidential nomination. Before that, however, in 2026, he must win re-election as governor. Conventional wisdom holds that will be little more than a speed bump on the road to 2028. Shapiro won in a landslide in 2022 as Republicans engaged in a nine-way primary and then ran a lackluster general election campaign. The party, however, got its act together this year, getting behind McCormick early, creating a blueprint for future success. Shapiro will face a vastly different political landscape in 2026. His party's voter registration edge has been substantially eroded, placing the parties on near equal footing. His dalliance with a vice presidency revealed cracks in his political armor as a sexual harassment scandal involving one of his cabinet secretaries and his attempt to straddle the fence on school choice revealed problems within his own party. The bottom line is that when you have seen one election, well, you have seen one election. And political truisms are true until they are not. With Donald Trump in the White House and Pennsylvania Republicans energized by their sweep of statewide offices this year, Shapiro could be looking at a roadblock, not a speed bump, in 2026. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including 5DRadio.com in Fraser and WERG-FM at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.